Hey, where are you going, Jim? The elevator's over here.
Taking the stairs.
But our meeting's up on 8.
Yeah, I know.
But that's 8 floors up. That's like 8 times... 8, I don't... A lot of stairs.
That's the point. I've already lost a few pounds and earned almost $100 in wellness incentives.
Whoa, you're getting rewarded for working out?
Yeah, I know. I'm just as surprised as you are, Bob.
Fearless is full of surprises. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits and sign up at fepblue.org/chooseblue by December 11th.
Welcome to Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. Want to let you guys know real quick, this Monday edition of Locked On Eagles is brought to you by mybookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. And use the promo code LOCKEDON at mybookie.ag. My name is Michael Kist. You can follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. You can also follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football and Grandstand Sports Network. As always, I am here with my co-host Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
Always well, Mike. You know how it is, man. Life is a dream. How you been?
We took an L today, so it's I got mixed emotions because I'm watching Dallas get stomped by Denver, and Washington didn't look very good against the Los Angeles Rams. Whatever they are, who cares?
I'll tell you something, though, man. Going up against a team like the Chiefs, which is a very talented team and looks to be one of the teams to beat after 2 weeks of NFL play, I'm walking away from this game happy, because even though the Eagles didn't win, I saw exactly from them that which I wanted to see, as far as going punch for punch for the better part of three quarters. The units that should have excelled did excel. The players that should have won one-on-one matchups did win one-on-one matchups. They show that they can hang tight with the best of them. This game, and we'll talk more about it, I'm sure, but it came down to two turnovers. I mean, the Eagles led the Chiefs in first downs. The Eagles led the Chiefs in total yardage. If not for two turnovers that both occurred at or inside the 30-yard line, this is a completely different game script. I mean, scoreboard doesn't reflect it, but the Eagles were like punch for punch, and that's exactly what I wanted to see. So I'm walking away happy.
Yeah, you know, there's that part of it which makes me happy for sure. There is the other part that I'm not so excited about, and we're going to talk about it. It's the Eagles' run game.
What run game?
Or the abandonment thereof. All right, so against Washington, we had one rushing first down, 24 carries, 58 yards, 2.4 average. Terrible, terrible, terrible. Yeah. This game, six rushing first down, 17 carries, 107 yards, 6.3 average. However, as we were talking about before the show, you pointed out four carries of those and 55 yards of those came from Carson Wentz scrambles. So when you break it down, it doesn't look as good. Look, 46 passes by Wentz today. 46, Ben. The Chiefs had 28. The game was closed for the most part.
Yeah.
For a very good portion of the game. Last week, he had 39 passes. Wentz is on pace for 680 passes. 680. Now, think of it this way. Last year, 2016, there were only two quarterbacks that had over 670 passes. And then there's a huge drop-off. Like, that is egregious to continue to put our quarterback in that situation and have to carry the game on his back because we refuse, absolutely refuse, to commit to the run game. And Ben, I know you have some stats on that as well to follow up.
When I did the math to tweet out, because I've been tracking, you know, how many attempts does he have, we'll take the average, and then if that was every single game this season, how many attempts would that be for the season? I did it week one, and then I did it with the week two numbers as well. I literally redid the math multiple times because I didn't think that 680 was a real number. I really didn't. I was like, there's no way I've got this correct, that he would attempt 680 passes this season. Listen, Ruben Frank tweeted it out, most passing attempts by a QB in his first 18 NFL starts. Luck leads with 693, and Wentz comes in second with 692. And it's not like we're talking about a guy who... He had elbow soreness at the end of last season, number one. Number two, we're also not talking about... it's not as if he's attempting all these passes and he's also shattering like the touchdown numbers for quarterbacks or the passer rating. He isn't the greatest passer over 18 games, and where he's seeing this huge influx of attempts, which is, it can't be good for his elbow, number one, but also number two, I would argue that we see Wentz's play deteriorate late in games often, and I think it's because he has to throw the ball so many gosh darn times during a game that he just, the reversion to gunslinger is of course going to occur if he attempts 46 passes compared to 30. it's not good.
Yeah, and you're going to see some bad reps and some bad throws in that time. And you know, Wentz was a little bit up and down for the most part. I thought he was solid. That interception was really fluky. I mean, I still think he's got to be a little bit more careful with the ball in that situation. But at the same time, I mean, can you really blame him
right,
for that?
Right, here's my issue with that. It was fluky in a vacuum. But there's been so many fluky turnovers with Carson right. Wentz over the first 18 games of his career, right? And I started, because it's been a thing about which I've spoken over Wentz's career, and then it's also something that some analysts that may or may not be based out of Ireland tend to track when it comes to Wentz, to the chagrin of Eagle fans everywhere. I was tracking during the game just Wentz plays that could have slash should have resulted in a turnover, and we got to six. I'm not doing those metrics for every quarterback in the league, but I can tell you six is probably a high number. That his ball security is woeful. It's not good. And like, it just feels, you know, again, like, you know, I'm thinking about that interception. It's a ball off somebody's helmet on a screenplay where he's trying to throw it away. Darren Sproles slipped. It seems so anomalous, but we have to start looking at the full body of work and saying, why does Wentz always end up in these situations? I mean, the Terrence Mitchell, Zach Ertz catch, that is an interception. But when I talk about interceptable passes, the fact that that was an interception is ludicrous. It was in the breadbasket, right? He's not safe with the football.
Are you counting the, when you consider turnover worthy stuff, are you counting the two fumbles as well? Or is that just, that exists on its own as well?
I'm including those in the sense that, like, for both of them, I said, okay, could this have been covered by a Kansas City Chief realistically? Mm. In both cases, it was like, yeah, you know, it wasn't like an easy one.
Right.
And like, you know, the Brandon Brooks one where Brooks kind of backed into Wentz when he was winding up speaks to another point, which is we love it when Wentz escapes the pocket with all these, you know, grandiose movements, but the subtle pocket movement and the pocket awareness is not good, especially in the second half when he was, you know, trying to do a lot and you know, he felt the weight of being behind and he was trying to bring the team back. His feet just get stuck in the pocket. He sits there in the mud like a statue, tries to throw everything with his arm. And as a result of that, that lack of awareness of what's going on around him, just that feel, that vestibular sense, he ends up in places where you don't see quarterbacks very often have fumbles where their offensive lineman gets backed into them when they're trying to release it. The reason is they're usually aware that that's going on and they try to adjust their platform. Wentz to try to muscle it through a human being, you know? It's little stuff, man.
You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice, and usually it's what team to bet on this week, whether it's Steelers against Patriots or Bears against the Lions. Well, let me tell you this. Where you're betting at is just as important as who you're betting on, and that's why I always tell people to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been in this business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing, and they have the fastest payout. Seriously, it's just two business days. Lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go an absolute breeze. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to 100% bonus. Use promo code LOEagles, that's LOEagles, to activate your offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Along with that, Wentz 25 for 46, 333 yards, two touchdowns, one interception, of which we spoke, took six sacks. And for a quarterback that is adept at escaping sacks and holds up really well against, you know, interior pressure and hands and arms all over him and whatnot, that's not good at all for him to take six sacks. So let's move on to some of the passing. Some of the other guys in the passing game, other than Wentz, his targets. So Ertz and Jeffrey both had really good games, I thought. They were both over 90 yards. Torrey Smith can't consistently use his hands properly. Mac Hollins flashed late. The Chiefs did a good job knowing what our screen looks are because they all probably come from Andy Reid.
Yeah.
What did you think about the targets and the passing game in general from everything beyond Wentz?
I liked the fact that Torrey Smith was more involved down the field. I thought that was good. And then he was also involved in the intermediate levels as well. I was speaking a little bit on Twitter about throwing the ball to, you know, with placement to maximize yak. Because one of the things with which Carson Wentz struggles, and this I think falls heavily into the category of he'll get better at this with time. I just fully think that as you grow as a passer and you mature, not only can you improve your ball placement because you have a better understanding of your mechanics and how you throw, but also just understanding situationally. Wentz doesn't do well throwing the ball to maximize the yak opportunities for his receivers. He often has to make them stop and place, or, you know, he doesn't put them in a spot, like lead them into areas and everything like that. You know, that Torrey Smith throw comes to mind, where Smith had so much space around him but kind of had to cut off his dig to catch the ball and then ended up slipping. You know, a couple of low balls on comebacks necessitate that the receiver goes down to the ground, and thereby they can't run after the catch, which kind of bites into that game a little bit. But overall, yeah, I really enjoy the Eagles have a much more traditional passing attack now compared to his last season. They have the ability to stretch the field vertically more so than they did, and you can see how Wentz really, really does well working the intermediate and especially middle levels of the field. He does excellent work there.
Yep, and we'll move on to the defensive side of the ball. We'll attack these things a little bit more in depth as the week goes and the All-22 becomes available if we see anything of note or any schematic thing of note that Kansas City was doing to us or we were doing to them. We'll bring that up throughout the week as we work through this loss. But look, for the defense, 4 sacks. Brandon Graham, again, getting home, which is very encouraging. Derek Barnett played a lot of snaps. Vinny Curry couldn't close a sack that would have been absolutely clutch in that situation, which was disappointing.
That was a game-changing play, man.
Yeah. It was a backbreaker. Corey Graham couldn't fill an alley with a dump truck on that Kareem Hunt run.
Yeah.
Rasul Douglas had a quiet but solid performance, which is great because we are in need and banged up at cornerback.
Yeah.
How did you feel overall about the defense's performance?
Oh, man. I mean, that's really where I draw my optimism from this game, because firstly, the front four controlled the game. And you can talk about those last two final touchdown drives as much as you want. You had an Eagles squad, as far as the defense goes, that had to come out and defend against that play, the interception of Carson Wentz. They had to defend a short field, a 30-yard field, immediately after they had just been on the field for, you know, a significant period of time. Time of possession was a little bit warped as far as the second half goes. And so, yeah, they weren't able to hold that down. I thought the run game defense was exceptional. You know, you had Kareem Hunt had 13 carries for 81 yards. But if you take away that long of 53, which was on the Corey Graham fill, then you've got 12 carries for 28 yards. And those, you know, clearly aren't good numbers. And so they did very well. And we talked about this a little bit on the preview pod, that the Chiefs want to get you in a place where you have to have light boxes to cover all of their receiving threats. And thereby they can audible to a run on you. And the Eagles were very, very strict and very, very diligent in ensuring, especially on first down, that they had advantageous numbers in the box, and thereby forcing Alex Smith to throw the ball on first down and throw the ball on second down. They were able to work Kansas City there into third down situations, on which they were very, very successful. The defense was. KC was 5 for 12 on third down, which is it's an okay number, but at one point they were like 2 for 10 or 2 for 11 or something like that. You know, Philly really had them going there. The defensive game plan was very impressive, especially considering the injuries that came through, that they were able to match up in the passing game like that.
When you have a front four that can get home like that, and you know what, you're going to miss some sacks against Alex Smith because he's can maneuver in the pocket,
sneaky,
keep his eyes out the field. He's very, very sneaky, which sneaky means that he's white.
Yep.
And he's possibly fast. Can't confirm or deny that. So look, they were an absolute wood chipper in that game. And the Kansas City offensive line is nothing to sneeze at all. I was doing my piece for Kareem Hunt for my weekly workhorse on Inside the Pylon. Go check that out. And the work that offensive line was doing with Mitch Morse in the middle, especially, who I think is an elite center. Like you said, bottling up Kareem Hunt at first, and they kind of got away from him until that big run was very impressive and good to see. So I think we're going to continue to see good things from that defensive line as we move forward throughout the season. We weren't gashed in coverage as badly as we were. I think Jalen Mills had a bad one on Conley where he was out of phase and looked back, and it was a bad rep, but it was a good throw. So not much you could do about it anyway. But yeah, look, I want to put this on the table until tomorrow because I'm a little bit sick of this. I hate losses, man. I hate them. I can't stand them. Just a little personal story. Every time that I'm watching a football game, there's been 3 or 4 different cases now. My baby Augustus kissed a little AK-47 was upstairs, and my wife texted me. She says, "Let me know when you need your good luck charm," because the last time that she brought him down and put him in my arms was the Fletcher Cox, the incompletion from Kirk Cousins, and then we got a touchdown out of it, and the play stood even though it shouldn't have, right?
Yeah.
Then the next time she brings him down, and then the craziness in the San Diego game happens where they make the kick, then they ice the kicker, and then it's blocked. And I was like, what the heck's going on? I was about to have her bring him down, and then we go down two scores. So she brings him down anyway. We score. We get the onside.
That onside kick was awesome, man. That was Trey Burton. Just pay him money. Keep him on the – I mean, like,
right.
I love Trey Burton. What a heads-up play. It was good stuff.
So I'm holding little baby Augustus, little AK-47, thinking, is this like a thing? Like, what's going on with this? How hopeful were you when we got the onside? Was there a little bit of you that said, man, I think we can do this? And not like a 5%, I think we can do this, like a 50-50.
Oh, okay. 50-50, probably not. When with all the timeouts going on back and forth, that had me really stressed, man. I can't stand icing situations. Because I'm like, when I watch the games, I don't sit, right? I just pace, and I leave the room, and I come back into the room. I'm very bad at watching with people, man. Like, that's not good. No, like, I need to be just, like, alone and, like, be able to, like, talk to myself. It's not good. And then it looked, you know, camera angle before the ball landed, looked like we had, you know, a good setup. We had guys we needed to have guys. We had good numbers. Then just a great play by whatever that DB was. He got up there, got a hand in there. That was excellent stuff.
Right.
But no, I believed for a little bit. I believed. Let me throw a couple stats at you, Mike. And because I don't know how to react to these, so I'm gonna throw a couple numbers at you, and then I want you to tell me how to react. All right.
Like a Rarsex test. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Carson Wentz has played 18 games. In games during which his opponent has scored more than 19 points, he is 0-10. In games during which his opponent scored less than 20, so 19 or less, he's 8-0. All right? In one possession games, Carson Wentz is 1-7. And the only fourth quarter comeback he has to his name is the Atlanta game, where he had a go-ahead drive with 10 minutes left on the clock in the fourth. Tell me how to proportionately react to these numbers.
Sounds like a quarterback that might benefit from a run game, Ben.
I feel like that could be the answer to any stat you throw out about Carson Wentz.
He's not this dynamic passer that we need throwing that much during. Sometimes just take over with the run game when you have a lead instead of going three and out with the passing game. Look, I'm so frustrated about the run game that's going to be like on my mind for any question that you ask about Carson Wentz, to be honest with you. Like, I'm so frustrated with what happened in the offseason. And look, I know you're a Danelle Pumphrey guy, and for those that don't know, he just went on IR. He tore his hamstring. But with the Blunt signing and then Corey Clement making the team, and Wendell Smallwood is supposed to be good, but he's never healthy. And Darren Sproles is our starting running back. I don't care which way you put it. Give that man 20 touches a game. Give him 15 carries. Give him 5 catches. And then let Blunt come in these short yarded situations, but let's get 25 carries at least per game.
Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just 2 taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will help you get closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually just used SeatGeek to buy tickets to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus the New England Patriots in Week 5. It was super easy. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and to find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LONFL today. That's promo code LONFL for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
And let me throw this number at you, because, you know, I was asked, so would you rather them just stick with an anemic run game? And I said yes. And the reason being was the average distance faced by Philadelphia on second down was 9.95 yards, which is basically 10, which means that if they weren't picking up a first down by throwing the ball on first down, they were not picking up yardage on first down. You either are picking up a first down or you are... it's an incomplete pass. That's pretty much exactly what you're doing. They had so many like second and 13s, right? They had so, like second 11, seconds and 10s. You want in the NFL second and 7. because second and seven means that if you don't pick it up, you get third and seven. And third and seven is miles easier than third and 10. It's unbelievably easier than third and 10. The ability to pick up 3 to 4 yards on first down just keeps your offense on script. And so when you're facing on average, and obviously that number is a little bit like, you know, that number doesn't adequately reflect how many yards they gain on first down, because if they pick up a first down, it doesn't get into the numbers. But to be facing 10 yards on a second down speaks to just the fact that you need to run the football on first down more consistently to get into advantageous second and third down situations, and also to force the defense to respect the fact that maybe you can actually run the football.
I have a piece on Saquon Barkley, the Penn State running back. It's up on Breaking Football on Grandstand Sports Network. Go check that out. Where I was concerned about Saquon Barkley having 59 rushes for 0 yards or less on first down, because he's always trying to take the path of least resistance and trying to create, which he can because he's a fantastic athlete, and a lot of times it works out, but sometimes it doesn't. So I think in that piece, I figured out that from second and seven to second and 10 or more, it changes your first down probability from anywhere from 20 to 30%.
Right.
That's just from one down. It's, yeah, and you're absolutely right. It makes a gigantic difference. Get 3 yards instead of throwing again and having another incompletion or trying to throw some freaking bubble screen to manufacture what you think is a replacement for the running game. It's so frustrating, man. As somebody that likes smash mouth football and grew up enjoying that type of thing, you know, you don't necessarily need to be this power team with a Maryland eyes trying to shove it down people's throats. You don't need to be like the Boston College or the Georgia Tech of the NFL. But at the same time, man, get me some yards on first down. Get me some freaking yards on first down. For the love of God.
I'm so happy that this episode has just spiraled into anger about the running game. Regardless about that which we're attempting to speak.
All right.
It's just going to end
it,
up
It
like
all
that.
Circles back. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Good note. If you had a game MVP, if you're giving out a game ball, who's it going to?
Ooh. Oh, Ben, I don't know if I'm prepared for that one.
All right. I mean, I've got one. If you want me to grab it.
Yeah, Ben, so I have a question for you. If you had a game MVP, who would it be?
Scumbag. I'm giving it to Alshon Jeffrey, and this is the reason why.
He was in my head. Him and Ertz were up there for me,
right.
But go ahead.
It's frustrating because I want to give it to a defensive player, but there was so much good play on like equal planes from the defense. Anybody down from, you know, Jordan Hicks and Michael Kendricks had great games. Name an edge rusher, they had a good game. You know what I mean? Fletcher Cox, excellent in the middle. Bo Allen had a pretty good game from what I saw. You know, it's obviously tough to tell because you don't have the All-22 for defensive linemen. But, you know, all of those guys you can hear a case for. But Jeffrey did in this game that which he was brought here to do.
Right,
which was,
exactly.
I'm going to win on 10-yard slants if you give me more than 2 yards on the line of scrimmage and throw the ball near me in the red zone. And eventually I'm going to score a touchdown. There were a couple that were like, you know, too far out there and like there was no way he could get to them. And like, you know, some questionable offensive pass interference potential stuff. But then there was the back shoulder fade. And Wentz's back shoulder fades were on point today. There was the back shoulder fade that landed, and that's a touchdown. And that's why you brought Jeffrey. It was, you know, 92 yards and a touchdown. He's attacking the middle of the field, and then he's a red zone threat. That's why I brought him here. I'm glad he did it. Game ball.
And like I said before, man, he didn't make a couple of contested catches last week, and I said I guarantee you he's going to make them this week. And over the middle of the field today, he was fantastic when it came to that. So yeah, I'm going to go ahead and second that.
Oh wow, thank you so much for adding content to the pod here, Mike.
I was just, you know, trying to filibuster like our good friend Jimmy Kimski did. Yeah. All right, so tomorrow we're going to be talking a little bit more about this game. We're also going to be talking about some of the prospects that we saw over the weekend. Their fit with the Philadelphia Eagles as well. Ben, do you have anything else for the gentle listeners today?
Not that I can think of. The last thing I'll say is this, and I was kind of talking about this on Twitter with a couple of folks. You take a look at that Eagles schedule coming up. You've got a home against the Giants next week, and then you've got against the Chargers in LA, you've got the Cardinals at home, you're at Carolina against the Panthers, and then you end, that's a short week, and then you go long week Thursday into Monday Night Football against the Redskins. Oh, and then you've got home against the 49ers. Those are six very, very winnable football games. And from what we saw against Philadelphia, you know, if they're going to be contenders, not pretenders, if they're going to be legit, you know, division champ-esque players, because as of right now, I think after 2 weeks of play, you can comfortably say that they look like the best team in the NFC East off the eye test. I don't think anybody can dispute that. Those six games are six games that they should win. You know, on the road against, you know, decent, inconsistent teams, they should win. At home against divisional rivals, they should win. And so, you know, 1-1 right now, but with six very winnable games before the Broncos, 7-1, 6-2 should be the goal. It really should. And that would be huge moving into a back half of the schedule that's very tough.
I was going to say, yeah, that's very important. And we've talked about it before with this schedule. We need to get hot before we get into the back half of this schedule, and doing it without Darby and being hot and getting like that, and then getting Darby back, I think would be a big boost for this team as we enter a very difficult back half of this schedule. So, okay, this edition of Locked On Eagles was brought to you by MyBookie.ag. Get into all the action with MyBookie.com, where they will match your deposit up to a 100% bonus. Use the promo code Locked On. To hear us complain more about the Philadelphia Eagles' porous running game, you got to keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly. LeSean McCoy was a 26-year-old running back living in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He was a gorgeous runner with striking lateral agility. He contributed to the local passing game and was someone his peers looked up to. On Tuesday, March 3rd, 2015, LeSean went to a local Chickies and Pete's in the afternoon. He told friends he was going to work at the local NovaCare complex at approximately 2 p.m. He was never seen again. On Wednesday morning, LeSean again failed to show up for work for his scheduled shift. Concerned co-workers and friends called the police, and at 9 a.m., the Philadelphia Police Department was dispatched to his house. Upon arrival, investigators found his car parked in the driveway, unlocked, and the front door to his house was locked shut. Detectives knocked on his door repeatedly, but got no response. Police forced their way inside and searched the house entirely, but there was no sign of LeSean. To this day, there's been no confirmed sighting of LeSean McCoy. From Locked On Eagles and Inside the Pylon, this is Vanished, the investigation of LeSean McCoy's unsolved disappearance.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.